can put it as far away from you as possible, it'll be less. Good evening. Please join me in saying the Anna Bekoa. Anna Bekoa, Gedula Chumin Ha, Ta. These six letters have a gematria of 506, which is the same gematria as the phrase ahavatinam, or unconditional love. Kabel rinat amcha tzadvenu taharenu no ra ufreshayan sintet nun. These six letters spell two Hebrew words, kra satan. Kra means to tear up, and satan is the name of the negative force that gives us free will. The same six letters can be permutated, rearranged, to spell sha'ar katan, which means small gates. And it's a hint to us, a reminder, that to guard our gates, which are the eyes, the ears, the nose, and the mouth. The letters of the month of Kislev, the Gimel that created the planet Jupiter, the planet Tzedek, and the Samech that created the constellation Keshet, which is the astrological sign of Sagittarius. Together, the Samech and the Gimel have a gematria of 63, which connects us to the energy store known as the Sefirah of Bina. And this is where we would normally stop and do this. I don't do it in the class because it takes too long. But whenever you say the Anna Bekoach during Kislev, this on the second verse, you would stop and do the chart. Na gibor dor sheyehudcha kevava shamre. Nun gimel dalet yud kaf shin. The first three letters, nun gimel dalet, have a gematria of 57, which is the same as the Hebrew word zan, which means parnasah, or sustenance. And sustenance means the fulfillment of any desire. Yud Kaf Shin is a healing sequence that allows us to take any part of our body that needs healing back to its stem cell state, where it will be cleansed, where it will be healed, where it will be rejuvenated, and then return it to the body where it will again do its work as it was meant to do. Perfectly. Barchem tacharem rachamei sitkatcha tami gamle betetresh tzaditach gimel. This sequence connects us to the Sefirah of Netzach and its energy of eternal victory. Chasin kadosh berov tuha na'el adata chet kuf bet tet nunoyen. This sequence connects us to the Sefirah of Hod and its essence of appreciation and thankfulness. Yachid geyeh lamcha p'nei zogrei kedushata yud gimel lamed ezayin kuf. This sequence connects us to the Sefirah of Yesod and its essence of being the foundation, foundation of whatever frame of reference you're dealing with. The foundation in our bodies, it represents the sexual organs as well as the spine. Shavatenu kabel ushmatiyakatenu yodea talumot shinkufav tzadiyuta. These six letters have two components. The first two, shin and kuf, has a gematria of 400. 400 represents the four worlds times 10 sephirot within 10 sephirot. 400 represents completion. It represents ultimately perfection. The last four letters have a gematria like the first verse of 506 and represents ahavatinam, unconditional love. And we learn from this that the path to completion and ultimately to perfection is by injecting unconditional love in every step in our process. We have brought the energy of creation into this space, and now we're going to separate between the right column energy and the left column energy, the sharing energy and the receiving energy, the positive and the negative. And we're going to use the 13 attributes of wisdom to do this. Adonai Yohei Wahei, Adonai Yohei Wahei, El Rahum Bechanun, Erech Apayim, Berav Chesed Ve'emet, Notzer Chesed La'alafim, Noseyawon Wafesha, We would now scan the 72 names of God, right to left and top to bottom. And that is what we will be discussing today. And we also would mention the names of the Tzaddikim, if I could remember them, that left today, because they are connected to the energy of this day. And on my website, you have all of that. And we also have verses from the Tanakh that connect us to the energy of the year. And one of the verses is Lamentations chapter 3, verse 52, which connects to this year of the goat, 5777. And the first letters of the five words of that verse can be parsed into three Hebrew letters, tzatz, ki, ach, which translates as pretend. Let me think what it is. It's not pretend, but it's to be like brothers, to act like brothers. And this is a tool that can be utilized during this year to expand and prevent the chaos that is going to be and has been already in the year of the goats, 5777. And the eighth verse of the Ana Bekoa, we say in a whisper. But I say it out loud for the purposes of teaching. Baruch Shem Kivod Malchuto Leolam Wa'ed. I'm now going to read a verse from the Zohar to bring the energy of holiness into our space. And I'm reading a verse from Bereshit Bet. I'm reading verse 83 in section 28, and I'll start with the L'shem Yichud. L'shem Yichud Kudsha Berichu Ishkintei Bidchilu Urchilu Urchilu. Udhilu urchimu liakta shem yud he bavavhe, yichuda shilim b'shem kol Yisrael, limud Torah mitzvah, lim laasok Torah mitzvah. Vayehi noam Adonai Eloheinu aleinu maasei yadeinu konenei aleinu maasei yadeinu konenehu. Beka ad rucha da de itkalel, meek leho, the kal ho, kalilan bea, salek, the eat achad, the al, the goy, he kala talita, ad the eat achad, the rucha, the taman, the goy, ha hu amuda, the kaim, the em saita. Ukdein kola ishtalem ad haka kid kayot the call who rucha chada kalel mikola ushlim mikola kada av rucha ruach echad lakol haka akra al it da. Da beka b'mareya. And when the spirit containing and contained by all those lower than it rises, enters the third chamber and connects with the spirit inside, the pillar that stands erect in the middle of the chamber, then all it is complete as it should be until this point. All become as if one spirit that contains all and is complemented by all, as was stated before, and they all have one spirit. Here is the secret of bowing in order to reach full cleavage with his master. Does anybody have any questions other than the fact that it's not understandable? Actually, it is understandable, but it's taken out of context so that you don't
understand.
It doesn't flow, but it's speaking about different spiritual levels of consciousness and how in this third chamber, which represents Hod in the tree of life, thankfulness and appreciation literally unifies all things. There's a midrash. That describes that all of the different animals and all the different plants and all the different rocks and streams are all talking, singing praises to God all the time. And by doing that, everything is unified because they're all doing the same thing at the same time, even if what they're singing is different from the others. It's unified within the diversity of creation. And that's what people have not yet learned. Unification is not that I'm right and you're wrong. It's that I'm right and you are also right, because you have a different perspective than I have. That's the appreciation that we all have to learn. So are there any questions?
Well, you say, you know, you're right and I'm right. How do you get people to understand that? You know, that I can be right and you can be right. Doesn't mean I have to agree with you.
Correct. Historically, people couldn't understand that and they went to war. So one way of understanding I'm right and you're right is to realize that going to war doesn't accomplish anything. That's one way. Another way is if I give you a mashal, if I give you a metaphor, sitting in front of you is a fish tank. The in front of all of us is a fish tank. The glass that I'm looking through in the fish tank is red. Glass you're looking through is green. She's looking through orange. The other person is looking through yellow. So what color is your... Is it the fish? When you look through green glass, it's green. When you look through orange glass, it's orange. Aren't you both right? But what is the truth? The truth has to be, the truth is that you're both right from your perspective. But there's an ultimate truth, which is if you climb up to the top of the fish tank and look down on the fish through clear glass, you're going to see that the fish is silver or gold or whatever it is. This is, I'm right and you're right. To get to the truth, we have to climb to the top of the fish tank. This metaphor is very real in our world because the politics of America, as an example, you have people who think that the path to helping other people is through local rights, cities and states providing for them. You have other people who think that the path is that let's take taxes from everybody and share with everybody based on need. This, are they both right? Yes. What's the truth? The truth is what the people of America will cause for the next 4 years to have happen. And then there'll be another election where they're both right. And you'll see how the pendulum swings back and forth.
It was obviously a lot of unrest that got him elected.
Not really unrest. It was people being afraid.
Job law, factories closed?
Factories closed, and people did not want to be retrained. And because they didn't want to leave where they were, take the coal areas of West Virginia as an example.
Right.
If you projected logically, we had to move away from coal because it was harmful to the environment. Now there are people who say it's not, but I don't, it just confuses the discussion.
Yeah.
So the coal mines were going broke. They laid off people.
Mm-hmm.
There were programs
to retrain,
but nobody wanted to do it because it meant moving out of the area where they'd lived for 4 or 5 generations. They didn't want to do it. They had their homes. But all of that is part of the individual's tikkun. The reaction to it was to vote the way they voted for Trump.
Right.
Are they right? Yes. Are they the other people right? Yes.
Right.
What's the truth? It doesn't matter. The truth is that they're both right. But it's not about being in conflict. There's a concept that we'll talk about next week called binding by striking, which is a paradox. The paradox is, how can you be unified? How can you bind together with other people by pushing them away? By striking them? You can't. Yes, you can. It's the only way you can. But we have to understand that. In the Talmud, they call it a machloket, an argument for the sake of heaven. Meaning, I'm right and he's right. Let's find the truth between them. And there's always a truth. We have Hanukkah coming up. I'll give you a perfect example. In the Talmud, the house of Hillel says, light one candle the first night, 2 the second night, 3 the third night, and so forth. The house of Shammai says, no, light 8 the first night, 7 the second night, 6 the third night, and so forth. Who's right? The halakha says we light one the first night, two, and so forth. But if they're both right, who is really right? How do you reconcile these two? And they're logical in their arguments. It's understandable how they, why they argue what they argue. But the essence of what is the truth? Before Mashiach, the house of Hillel. After Mashiach, the house of Shammai. If you light candles for Hanukkah in the house of, after Mashiach comes, you'll light 8 the first night, 7 the second night, 6 the third night. So how many candles will you light this year? What will you light on the first day? You've just been given the information. Do you have the consciousness of Mashiach?
Light 8.
Or do you have the consciousness that you're still in the process of growing? They're both right. And here's a way to reconcile them. But it's all about, I had to argue the two points of view. I had to think like the two points of view to find out what is the right thing for me to do. Now, I'm not telling you to light 8. I would never tell you to go against the common practice.
The training. The way we do. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So today's class is talking about the 72 names of God. And the essence of the 72 names of God is this chart. The letters of this chart come from three verses in the story of the splitting of the Yam Suf. It's chapter 14 of Exodus, verses 19, 20, and 21. And if you want to read that, each of those verses have 72 letters. And the Zohar tells us how to align these verses in a way, combine them so that these 72 triads are revealed. Each of these triads is a name of God. Now, what does it mean to be a name of God? It's an attribute of God. It's an energy of God. The first box, Vav Hey Vav, is time travel. It's a way to go back to the first Shabbat. We say it every Friday night when we say Vayechulu Hashamayim V'Haaretz. That those three words, the first letters is Vav Hey Vav. The next box to the left, Yud Lamed Yud, is God will fight for you. It's an attribute of God, meaning protecting you. The third, look. The third is Samach Yud Tet, and is miracle making. The fourth, Ayin Lamed Mem, is to eliminate negative thoughts. The fifth, Mem He Shin, is to heal. It's healing energy. All of these attributes of God are names of God. And we learn a lot from that understanding. Because your name, every person's name, is a metaphor for your soul. By studying the Hebrew letters of your name, you can learn the attributes that are connected to your soul, both good and bad. And part of what Kabbalah teaches and what Musar teaches and many other Hasidic groups teach, we are here to change ourselves by choosing which attributes we want to minimize and which attributes we want to strengthen. But before we do that, we have to understand something. And so we have to go back from verse 19, 20, and 21 of chapter 14 to the verse 15. So you're all familiar with the Yam Suf. The Jews have left Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
They've reached the Yam Suf. Now, I keep saying it Yam Suf for a reason. It's not the Red Sea.
Oh.
It's
yes.
not the Reed Sea.
Okay.
These are corrupted translations.
Okay.
Yam means sea. It's a clear translation. Everywhere you see the word Yud Mem, it means sea. Whatever that means. Seas have water. Water always relates to Torah. Suf is the Hebrew word sof, meaning end. Yam Suf is the sea of end. Another way of understanding that is it's the sea of limitations. Where do we find limitations? Nowhere. We see limitations as the illusion. Is there enough food in the world for everybody?
Yes.
Is there enough buildings and shelter in the world for everyone?
Yes.
So why do people feel that there's homeless or see homeless? Why are there, why do we feel that the scientists tell us that we're going to run out of food in 12 years or 90 years or whatever their current forecast is? Because human beings create limitations for themselves. The sea of limitations, the splitting of the sea of limitations, is exactly that. Breaking out of the limitations we've created for ourselves. That's the metaphor of the story. So now let's understand the story on a deeper level. When the children of Israel are at the Yam Suf, behind them is Pharaoh. To the sides of them, we're told, are wild animals that will tear them apart. If they go forward, they're going to drown. So what do you do when you don't know what to do? Some of the children of Israel said, let's go back. It's better to be a slave than to die. Some of them said, well, let's go into the ocean. We'll drown. It's okay. I mean, better to die than to be a slave. All of these, and there were two other attitudes that are mixed between the two. What do you do when you are in a situation where you have no choice in your mind, in your limitation?
You ask Hashem for
help. You ask Hashem for help. You cry out to God. And you know what God answered?
I'm
here. Ma titzach alai. Why are you crying to me? What he's saying is, I have given you the tools. You don't need me. Why are you crying to me? Actually, he's saying, why are you crying to me? There's a higher level you need to cry to. You need to act. What he says is, why are you crying to me? Move out. Move forward. Take a step. And the Midrash says that only the chieftain, the leader of the tribe of Judah, stepped into the sea. And he started to walk. And he walked and came to his knees. So nothing happened. He kept walking. It came to his waist. I'll get it. Whoop.
I can get it. Everybody can get it. Be careful.
Why are you, you know, he comes to his waist and nothing happens. It comes to his neck, to his shoulders, nothing happens. Comes to his neck, nothing happens. He keeps walking. It comes to his mouth, nothing happens. He takes another step and it's now at the level of his nostrils. And that's when the sea splits. It's teaching us, you have to be certain in order to activate these names. Will God fight for you? Only if you're certain. Will God heal you? Only if you're certain. Now, certainty in Hebrew is the word vadaut, or in Aramaic, vadai. You'll always hear the religious people talk about faith, which is emunah, and bidachon, trust. Trust God. Have faith in God. But the highest level is certainty. Certainty that God will do for you. In the first class, I did this. I held this something up. Will it fall to the table? And everybody says, yes, of course it'll fall to the table. Then I ask, do you believe it will fall to the table, or do you know it will fall to the table? And what is the answer? You know it will. Why? Because you have experienced it. In your life, you have observed and had the impact of a million things.
Yeah.
Welcome. It will fall to the table because it has to fall to the table. It's got gravity.
You have certainty.
It's not certainty, it's experience. You know. There's a difference between belief, where you might be 99%
sure,
but there's 1% of doubt. Whatever doubt you have, that separates you from God. God has a nation that he created called Amalek. And Amalek is a nation that has the same gematria as the Hebrew word for doubt, safek, 240. So whenever you see Amalek, it's talking about doubts. That's the essence of doubts. That's the essence of the nation of Amalek. That's why God is at war with Amalek throughout the generations, because God is certainty. God knows what's going to happen. He's in control. He does it. We're the ones who have doubt. We have to eliminate those doubts. We have to be certain. We have to know that God will use these attributes to help us. All we have to do is be certain.
Are there descendants of Amalek?
Yes.
That are still here?
Yeah, they're right now they're in Iran.
In Iran.
Well, in the Second World War, they were in Germany.
Oh.
In the time of the destruction of the temple, they were in Rome. I'm sorry?
ISIS.
ISIS is Amalek, yes.
Now in Iran and ISIS.
Hmm?
That's the descendants of the Amalek nation?
Yes. Now, if you read the Bible, King Saul was told by the prophet Samuel, go to war against Amalek and kill every man, woman, and child, and all the animals. And King Saul said, yes, I will do that. They go to war, and they're victorious. And he kills all the men, and all the women except for the virgins. And he doesn't kill the animals, only the ones that are ugly or not valuable, but the others he kept for booty. But he'd been told to kill everything. He didn't do it. Why? His answer is, I'm a king and I am a prophet. All kings are prophets. And in my prophecy, I saw that there was going to be Purim. There was going to be the danger to the nation from Amalek, who Haman is a descendant of a god who is the king of Amalek, who was allowed to live one day. And during that day, they gave him a woman, and she got pregnant. So Amalek grew. And he said that's what I saw would happen. And Samuel said, but you don't understand. You're seeing one potential aspect. Had you killed everybody, there would never have been a Purim, because there would have been no need for Purim.
Right.
Doubts would have left the world, because there would be nobody to resurrect the doubts. This is what we have to do ourselves. Stop resurrecting the doubts. Stop being fearful. If you understand that, and it's easy to understand it, it's not easy to do it. And one of the techniques, let's see if I where it is. One of the techniques that we utilize is to take our Hebrew name and to, where do I have the Book of Adam somewhere?
Right here.
Yeah, but I have it here as well. I just don't see
I think
it.
It's here.
Do you have all of them?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. The Book of Adam, I use this as an explanation. And if you go on my website, in class number 4, basic class number 4, look at the handouts. You'll see the 72 name charts in color. And you'll see two different configurations, because they're both positive attributes. But the idea that's on the Book of Adam is to intertwine your name in Hebrew with the attribute of certainty. Do this every day.
Are you meaning your Hebrew name?
Your Hebrew name, or the name that you're using. So if you want to use Patricia, let's put it into Hebrew letters and then intertwine it with that name. Because the name you use is who you are.
Right.
You know, a lot of people are given a Hebrew name, but they don't use it. So use your English name unless you're ready to start using your Hebrew name. But intertwining your name, and that's something you create for yourself, or you can send me an email requesting it, and I'll when I have time, I'll put it together for you. And you can go on my website, because there's a number of names that have already been done, so your name may be there. Yesha, YESHSHEM.com. And there's a local search box on the top right. And the Revealed Wisdom link is where all the different classes are. So you'll be able to find it, or you can call me or send me an email. My email address is yeshem@hotmail.com. So everything is the same names. But the whole idea is when you intertwine your name with different attributes, different names of God. The word Shalom is the name of God, because God is peace, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
The word Simcha, which is joy. Isn't God joy? It's the name of God. There are 72 names in this chart, but there are many, many more names of God, because God is infinite, meaning there's infinite attributes. By intertwining your name with a given attribute, you are bringing that energy into your soul. You want to do it with refuah, healing? Do it with refuah. But the sages have told us Mem He Shin is a better way of doing it for that.
Oh, you say if you use either your Hebrew name or your English name.
What do people call you?
People here call me Isabel.
And what does Albert call you?
Albert.
Isabel.
So Isabel is your name until you tell him, tell us to call you by your Hebrew name. As I said.
What is it? Yehudit.
Yeah, Yehudit. So it's up to you which one you want to use.
It would be interesting to put both names in and see if they come out the same or different.
They will come out different because there's different letters, but you can do both names and make sure that you're getting it into. Because who you are is what people call you.
Toby is the
only one. When I started to study Kabbalah, and I learned what I've just explained to you, your name is your soul. I started to use my Hebrew name. Mm. And everybody said, seriously, my teacher said, what are you doing? I said, because it feels right. Mm. I've come to understand a girl is given the name Deborah. I use this as an example. Or Robert. A man is given the name Robert. As he grows, as a child, she's called Debbie,
mm-hmm.
and he's Bobby.
Mm-hmm.
At one point in their life, they say, I'm Deborah.
Right.
I'm not Debbie anymore.
Right.
I'm Robert, or Bob. I'm not Bobby anymore.
That happened to me, because I used to be Patty. I used to be Izzy.
Okay. So at some point, you decide to change it.
Right.
And you tell people, don't call me that anymore.
Yeah.
Call me this. Why?
Because you're growing.
Because you're growing spiritually, and the name no longer fits you.
Right.
So you have to decide which name fits you. You don't want to tell people to call you Yehuda. So they call you Isabel. And everybody goes along with it because you don't say anything.
Right.
But if you want to change it, I changed it. People called me Henry. And my response was, who's he? You know, now that's a silly response. But it got the point across. I don't want to be called that anymore. My name is Hanoth.
I had to tell people. And my Hebrew name, Toby. Always calls me
Chayasara. Right. So it's what you want to be called. And that's the understanding. You know, the Ashkenazis generally give two names, Chayasara. But what they're doing is they're giving two aspects of the soul that are incomplete. They create schizophrenia, actually, when they do this. They don't understand it. The Sephardi tend to give one name.
Well, years ago, nowadays.
Yeah. Nowadays, there's been changes. Exactly. So, the general issue on all of this. These are attributes of God. They're very holy names. But intertwine them with your soul because your soul is holy.
And then Rabbi Shelton, you can't do that. The child was given a Yiddish name, that's his name. You can't all of a sudden say the Yiddish name is no good.
Yeah.
Let's give him a Hebrew name. So we stopped doing that. If they said their name was whatever it was in Yiddish, Tavila.
Exactly.
You know, so we called him by that name. We didn't change it.
But that's exactly the issue. The child has to be the one to say, I have changed. Spiritually, what happens when you go to sleep? 613 parts of your soul go upstairs. In the morning,
they return.
Not all of them.
No.
if you completed a tikkun of one part of your soul, it doesn't come back down, a different part comes down. When enough of those parts have come down, you don't feel that your name fits you anymore. And you start to ask for change. People don't understand this because they're not taught the spiritual laws. That's what Kabbalah does. That's what these classes are starting to do, is giving you that information. You know? So essentially, the charts and the things that I've given you, we utilize them within the frame of our morning or any time during the day. But we utilize them, the more you scan them, the more you integrate them into your name and utilize that technique, so more change takes place. Now, I do, when you look on the website and you see the 72 names of God, you'll see it with my name. I've integrated it, each one of them with my name. I won't do that for someone who hasn't been scanning it for at least 6 months daily. Because
So you should scan it every day.
You need to scan it. Just like you say the Anabakoa, you need to scan the 72 names, both sets, every day. And as you go along, you'll see that I add different things into the Anabakoa, because I want people to be utilizing these attributes of God and these tools of God as we go through life. So that's really the essence of the class. Use certainty in your life. Doubt separates you from God. Any doubt you have, I'm not sure that I'm going to have enough money to pay my rent next month. Of course, you won't have it. God forbid.
No, but you can say.
But when that thought comes, one of the tools I teach is to imagine a wooden box in your mind. Take the thought and put it into the box. Put the top down on the box and lock it up. Once a day, burn it up. It's not part of you. It's doubts that you're feeling.
It's negativity.
It's listening to the negative system. Be certain.
I'm going to have to read this one.
Exactly. I will tell you a story that it just blows my mind every time I remember it. I was living with an Israeli man who we should never have been roommates. We had the wrong astrology. We should never have been together. But we chose to be together knowing that, because we figured if we could live together, then maybe we'd be able to live with a woman someday. And then after 3 years, we reached a point it was time to separate. And he went to a created a painter's gallery on a main busy business street. And that's where he lived. And I would go over and still study with him. And every month, at the last day of the month, I'd walk in, and there was a three-day notice to evict or pay rent. And I'd walk in, I'd see the thing, and here he is, sitting at the table studying the Torah, the Zohar. You and I, given a three-day notice, you're going to go out to try and raise the money. You're going to go try and borrow the money, right? No. He studied the Zohar. That's all he did. For three straight days, he sat at that table studying the Zohar. And every month, the last 10 minutes, somebody walked in with a check or 15 people walked in with checks, and his rent got paid. Month after month, I saw what certainty does.
I know, I was just thinking that, but I've seen it work.
Yeah. And if you look for it, you'll see it work in your own life.
We're supposed to take action, though. We are.
Yes, the action is studying the Zohar. The action is making a phone call to borrow the money, to ask people. Everybody has different actions for the different situations. I would not be the one to sit and study the Zohar. I study it every day.
Yes.
But it's still, I couldn't have done that. I didn't at that time have that level of certainty. Today, maybe I did, but God forbid I have that test. I don't need that test. You know, so that's the issue. So Hashem sends the tests, I'll deal with it. But God forbid, and thank God he hasn't done that.
Hashem also, I know,
leads you down certain paths.
Journey. And then certain people go down.
Exactly.
One path.
And others go on another path.
Yeah.
And are they wrong? Is one right and one the other one wrong? No. We're both right. It's what's right for you. There's a class that we give, I think it's the 15th class. It's relativity. And it explains that what's right for one is not right for another. But if you ask anybody born in America, raised in American schools, everybody's equal, right? So what's right for one is right for the other. And that's the way you think. You've been raised to think, and you have to change that way of thinking. But you're not yet ready to. Let's wait till we get to the 15th week.
Change it to what?
To realize that what's right for me is not necessarily
right
for somebody else. And what's right for them is not necessarily right for me.
Right.
And so I have to find what is right for me.
Yes.
And that comes from connecting and trusting and having certainty in your intuition. But we all know that our intuition lies to us from time to time. So how do I know when it's going to lie, and how do I know when it's not, when it's telling me the truth? And that takes true judgment of myself. Because if I have done negative actions during a day, then my intuition is not going to tell me the truth tomorrow. But how do I know I did negative actions? Because every time I do something, I know I'm right. If I hit the guy, I'm right. He shouldn't have done that. Isn't that the human being? I'm using that, isn't it?
I know.
If you argue with somebody, aren't you right? Or you wouldn't argue with them, right?
You wouldn't have an argument unless you were arguing because you think you're right.
Correct. But what you're really doing many times is manifesting the desire to receive for oneself alone. How many times have you argued because you know that you want to be right? You don't want the other person to be right. So you continue the argument. Have we done that from time to time in our lives?
He does it all the time. He's always right.
Right.
Excuse me. It's not that he's always right.
He thinks he's always right.
It's not even that he thinks he's always right.
What is it?
He's your mirror.
He's my mirror?
He's your mirror, just as you are his mirror. Can you see yourself, truly see yourself? You can't.
No.
You can't. You don't know whether you're doing right at any given time.
No, of course.
Only way you can know that is to see your mirror, which is the people around you. That's why they're there. God created the universe for you. He created the other people so that you could see who you are. So it's not that Albert thinks he is right. That's an attribute in you. And he's there to show you that so you can decide, let me get rid of that in me. I'll tell you a very wonderful story that illustrates the point. The Baal Shem Tov, you know who the Baal Shem Tov is. He has a parishioner who's a thief. His name is Moshe the Ganef. Moshe the Ganef is a very good thief. There's a Russian nobleman coming to town, and it's announced that he's got a chest of 50,000 golden rubles. And nobody's going to be able to steal it because he's got all the security possible. Moshe thinks, wait a second. Why should I steal a little here and a little there? I'll take it all, and then I won't have to steal again. Now, his whole life, Moshe the Ganef, whenever he stole something, he'd run to the Baal Shem Tov and say, Rebbe, give me a blessing so the police don't catch me. And the Baal Shem Tov would give him a blessing, and the police couldn't find him. They couldn't prove anything. This is the last time he's going to steal. And somehow he gets the 50,000 golden rubles. And he runs to the Baal Shem Tov because the police know the only guy in town who could even come close to this is Moshe the Ganef. He runs to the Baal Shem Tov and he knocks on the door. Baal Shem Tov has died. So tell me, who took whose place?
Ganef.
No. You're right, but wait. So they say the Magid de Mezra took his place. Please, let me see him. He goes into the Magid de Mezra. The Magid de Mezra says, you want a blessing that the police don't find you? I don't give blessings to thieves. Get out of here. What does he do? The police, you can't go home. Police know where he lives. He runs into the forest. And he cries himself to sleep on the grass. And he has a dream. The Baal Shem Tov comes to him in the dream and tells him, go to my grandson. I told him you'd be coming to ask him for a blessing. He'll give you the blessing. And the police won't be able to find him. So he goes to the grandson, and that's what happens. He asks the grandson for a blessing. Grandson gives him the blessing, and the police can't find him. Now, what's the issue of the story? What's the moral of the story? The Baal Shem Tov is not a thief.
Right.
He has no concept, no aspect of stealing within him.
Right.
He can't see Moshe the Ganef as a Ganef.
Yeah.
He can only see him as the righteous person he will become. Because that's his mirror. And that's exactly what happens. Because the police couldn't find him and because he became wealthy, he became a righteous student of the Magid de Mezra and eventually set up his own court, his own Hasidic group. No longer, because
he had changed.
The Torah changed him. The blessing changed him. The 50,000 rubles he gave away and his students gave to him, you know, it's all, but the point is, the Baal Shem Tov couldn't see the thief. The Magid de Mezra, who wasn't that at that level yet, could.
The Baal Shem Tov couldn't see.
Now, you don't want to hear me tell you that Albert is your mirror, because when you are pointing out at him, he always thinks that he's right.
I'm sure. I feel it.
Yeah.
Well, he's right, but look at your hand. One finger's pointing at Albert.
One finger's pointing towards you.
Three are pointing towards you.
Oh, look at what you hold. I just was saying.
You can't see it, but
yeah.
Here's Albert.
Yeah.
Three are pointing back to me, and one is pointing to God. He's your mirror. Now, maybe the mirror is incorrect and you're reading it wrong. Okay. Maybe it's not in you. But if you see it in him, it's in you.
Why?
Why?
Because he was put there. He's there.
When the closest relationship you have is husband and wife, that relationship, its purpose is to see the deeper aspects of yourself. Now, Isabel never thinks she's right.
But deep
down inside, her ego says, you're right. You don't manifest it. You don't display it to other people. But if you really are truthful in evaluating yourself, you'll see that Albert is showing you yourself.
She doesn't think she's right, or she doesn't.
She knows she's right.
Yeah.
But she doesn't want to show it to anybody.
Right.
I'm not using you. I'm not criticizing.
No.
Right.
Because if you saw the inside of me, there's nobody worse in the world.
Oh my gosh.
But that's really who is your mirror? You and I, we live separately, we live alone. Who is our mirror? Isabel, you are my mirror right now.
Yeah.
Okay? When I hear a student call me with a problem, that's my mirror. And that's how I perceive it. And that's the only way I can help them. Is when I realize they're showing me myself, so I can now bring it and help them. Not that I can tell them what to do, and I will never tell them what to do. Did I tell you to go to the mitzvah before your daughter's wedding?
Absolutely.
Actually, if you think back, I didn't
tell you.
I suggested it. I never tell you what to do.
No, he didn't say I had to, but he talked about it. And
I explained what was the benefit, all the rest of it. But I couldn't have helped you if I didn't realize that was, I needed the cleansing.
Yeah. And I needed the cleansing.
Exactly. But that was the growth. Anyway, you've got now been given all of the 20 weeks in one. But
so
of course
I can feel.
Let's turn off the phones.
Okay.
Does anybody on the conference call have a question? Any questions?
I have a question, but I forgot what thing to touch. A question.
Go ahead, Leah Esther.
I wanted to know because I have a monetary gift for you, and as well, I didn't get the last two, the 72. Names of God, and then this handout either I've been able to get. So I wanted to know what would be a good time or
the next time you're in the building, you can come by and I'll give it to you, or I can mail it to you, whichever you prefer.
I know
you don't have access to a computer, otherwise I'd tell you to go there to get it. But I have them up for you, and you just let me know whether you want to, whenever you're in the building, I can hand it to you. Or if you want me, just give me your address by email, and I'll mail it to you.
No, I'm going to come get it. Am I still allowed to come to class?
Let's have that conversation separately.
Okay.
Once I get a sense of what's going on with that.
Okay.
We'll have that conversation separately. I don't want to put it on the conference call.
Okay.
Any other questions?
No, that was pretty much it.
Okay. You have a good evening.
You have a good evening, and classmates have a good evening as well.
You too. Thank you.
Shalom.
Shalom.